podcast where we take a deep dive into different educational topics to help you optimize your life. I am your host, Jeremy, and today is another Friends with Jeremy episode where I have Mr. Dr. Victor Kaiser. Is that good? Or are you like the Roadhouse quote? Calling you Mr. is like putting a outhouse, or I'm sorry, putting an elevator in an outhouse.
Well, I think you just forgot the captain part too. So I think right now I go doctor captain, and maybe once I'm a field grade officer, it'll go major doctor. I don't know.
Yeah. How close are you to major?
Probably within a year.
Damn. You're going to beat me there.
Yeah. One of my friends just got picked up, but his year date was just a pinch ahead of mine.
Awesome. And you are reserves after you're being full time, right?
Yep.
And it was crazy because I thought you were out. For some reason, I thought that you were completely done. No, I'm sorry. I thought you were in the
IRR,
where basically for the listeners, that's where like it's a holding position that if Uncle Sam needs you, he's going to pull you back out. But you're still just on same as me, you know, doing state, quote, National Guard. You are Federal Reserve. So.
Yep. And I'm actually heading out of town this weekend. And the week before our NSCA conference that we had in Missouri was when I hit my 24th year.
That's awesome. Well, two things there. I am actually heading out this weekend too. Was supposed to take my ACFT test where I was going to try to go for the 600. I've been doing some sprint work, some interval work to try to get my run time down. That's generally the only one that, you know, I've been missing consistently. You know, and sometimes when I take the ACFT, like you just have a bad day. Sometimes the pushups aren't there, right? And I end up with a score, you know, high 90s, or, you know, there's always something that could go with the first four or five events where I'm off a little bit, but the run has consistently got me as far as like never hitting 100 on it. So that is a goal I have, is to max the test. But unfortunately, depending on when the last podcast, if it hits before this one, I will not be taking that test for a while. I'll be rehabbing this bicep tendon. I'm assuming after surgery. Doctor's appointment is today on that. So,
well, best of luck to you.
Yeah, we got a lot of parallels.
But at least you know how to eat for recovery.
Well, that what's funny is I think I'm going to do a little series, you know, for the podcast, or at least of the YouTube channel, which is the podcast has a YouTube, just in case you guys never have looked at it on YouTube and just listening on Spotify. But I'm thinking about doing a little series on it, just on recovery, because I think for a lot of people, especially when an injury happens, we put so much identity, for some of us, we put so much identity in us, ourselves as athletes, or maybe just as a quote fat loss client, right? Your identity now is losing weight, right? Because if you have a good week after week, that's where your identity is. You have a injury and it throws you completely off, right? Versus, hey, there's an injury, right? I have to accept it. I gave myself 24 hours to bitch and complain. Now I'm going to move forward, right? Like what can I do moving forward, you know, with this? And that's going to be my approach. So I think I'm going to talk about it, because I think there's some supplementation that I can talk about. I've developed some great colleagues over the years that, you know, one is a pharmacy that they do a compounding cream for inflammation for recovery. So I'm going to use the compounding cream on it that they make at their pharmacy. So I'm going to use some different stuff and just kind of document the journey with the whole goal. If the average person is back to full capacity in 6 months, 4 to 6 months is what I've been seeing, then I should be able to do it in less than that. Like that's the whole goal, is how to optimize the recovery process.
Sounds like a win.
All right. Speaking of the NSCA state conference that you ran, you put on, and I got to be, you know, a lecturer of it, and I guess, you know, POC for first form at it. It was an awesome conference. Like I love going to conferences myself. I love being part of them. I love to hear other people speak. I try to watch them, their mannerisms, you know, how well they engage the audience, pick up on things that I can do, you know, to make my briefs and my lectures, you know, better. But the one thing I wanted to talk about, you know, is just continuation of having the conversation of protein inside the athlete's diet or protein inside of the layperson's diet. Because what caught me, not off guard if I really sit and think about it, but a lot of times we put individuals on pedestals, or we think of individuals like, oh, they know that, with an assumption. And I think I do that kind of with like a CSCS. So when I see someone with a CSCS strength and conditioning, like I automatically think like, all right, they know all stuff, right? And maybe they don't, right? Maybe they are a specialist in agility or in, you know, helping someone increase their vertical jump or whatever the case is, right? But the assumption sometimes is like, oh, well, they know about protein. Like from my perspective, like they know about protein. But, you know, kind of listening to not only the lecturers who were there, but just the individuals that attended and some of the survey, you know, the two nutrition lectures that we did back to back seemed to like open up some eyes for people. And it was really like one of those aha moments that, hey, maybe we need to start implementing more protein into my own diet, but also into the individuals I'm working with.
Yeah. And, you know, I just got back from Chicago this weekend where I taught a CSCS exam prep clinic. So these are all individuals of varying different degrees. You know, like I've had an accountant before, might've actually been an accountant the time you came through here at Maryville. I had a guy that was in marketing recently this weekend. So there's a lot of different backgrounds that somebody would come into this, but just like the state clinic, there was a lot of favor around the nutrition side of the talk and really hammering home the point that protein is the most important piece. Everybody wants to get hung up on things, but that's kind of the foundation where we started. And I guess, you know, I'll say real quick before you go deep into this, you know, we get graded on state clinics on a negative 100 to a positive 100 scale. And I don't know the full scale, but anything over a 70 is considered world class. And we were a 75 this time. So, and that's, you know, a subjective attendee scored, you know, like almost not quite like a Likert scale, but they get to rate the event on a lot of different content areas. And they said that it was a 75. Now, as a state director, I get access to the, you know, end of clinic survey, the course critique, if you will. And the top two presentations in a room full of strength coaches, sports medicine, high school individuals, personal trainers, their favorite two talks were the nutrition ones, the protein ones from you and Mark Jones.
Yeah. And I would say this, like, you know, and I said this to you afterwards, I think, you know, when we were there, right. And it was early in the morning and you came over and it's like, hey, do you have your slides? I'm like, hey, I looked at Mark's slides and I'm like, I don't think I need them because they're the same, basically the same information, right? Definitely not the same because he had some studies on there that he was doing, you know, in his clinic or with the soldiers. I was like, as far as the references to the protein intake, they're the same. And yep. I was like, hey, can I do more, you know, hands-on and do some polls and some questions? And you're like, yeah, like, you know, send it. And so I always say this, you know, if Mark's listening or you know, I'm not taking, it was a dual relationship of why it went so well, right? Yep. Like, and I think ours separate would still get good responses on our, you know, content and how we, you know, got the crowd engaged, that type of stuff. But I think the combination of them really helped, especially me, because I then didn't have to cover the basis, right? Yep. I started with asking questions, right? I started kind of quizzing them. Hey, what did you just learn from Mark's presentation? But it also was that kind of the eye opening of getting to talk to some of the other presenters there who, you know, once again, are outstanding people in their, you know, quote lane, just asking some questions on protein. And you know, it really got me thinking of, okay, hey, first off, for the listener, it is okay, you know, like if you're struggling a little bit of getting your protein intake in, like it is normal. I think it is normal that we as a society, you know, undereat protein for maximizing results when it comes to optimal health, right? And optimal health, I think, and Nick, I'll ask you this, like I'm now going to think divine optimal health on, you know, if we look at it for what individuals, the research is showing us that we live a longer, healthier life, right? And what I mean by that is you have a high VO2 max. And once again, high is a relative term, but you know, mm-hmm. your VO2 max basically is elevated and you have good muscle and strength, right? Like, because those are the predictors of like living a longer, healthy life. And once again, there's outliers of this, right? I've seen people on social media be like, well, my grandmother, you know, it's genetic. She's never worked out a day in her life and lived to be 90. Great. But if you look at the majority, if we can get people's VO2 maxes higher, we can have them carry more muscle tissue and have more strength, which I think are two things that are combined together most times, we live a longer, healthy life. So when I say optimize our health, getting in better shape, right? I think as a society, we undereat protein in order to do that.
You know, one of the, you know, I like to teach through stories or offer up some funny phrases just so our students can remember it. And I would tell you that Indiana Jones was looking for the Fountain of Youth in the wrong place. You know, if you just hit a little bit of weights and, you know, VO2 is absolutely an important factor, but there are a lot of ways that you can accomplish a given task. You know, you can, if you absolutely despise running, but you still need to increase your VO2, well, you could just adopt a little bit more of a circuit style of training. You're lifting weights faster, less rest time, and the recovery piece between that will enhance your VO2. It's like all of our wrestlers, super high VO2. They're not going out and running for 4 or 5 miles. So there's a lot of different ways to skin the cat, but all of those factors are important. More muscle tone, good grip strength is, you know, a way that we test that has a great outcome on, you know, mortality. But yeah,
Well, and I
Indiana
think it's,
Jones, wrong place.
yeah, and I think it's relative too, right? So you start looking at like VO2s, okay? And you know, if we look at it, and this is just once again, I'm doing by memory and giving some numbers out there, but let's just say the average VO2 of a 25 year old, right, is 38 to 41. That by no means is elite,
I
right?
don't even know if I'd say that was normal these days.
100%, right? Like it could be a little bit lower than that, but if you're just throwing, you know, some numbers out there, what I'm thinking, high 30s, low 40s is like a average or good, you know, VO2 at an 18 to 20 year old. Okay. So as we age, right, then that could drop to 20, 25, you know. So when I'm saying, you know, higher VO2s, we're definitely not saying that needs to be up in the 60s and 70s, these elite levels. But you know, being able to maintain that, like if you're 65 to 85 years old and your VO2 is, you know, once again in the 30s, that's what we mean by high. Because what happens with detraining is it's going to go way down, right? So yeah, just by being fit and doing some exercise, we're going to be able to keep that VO2 up there. You know, once again, decrease the risk of just a lot of quote unquote diseases that we can prevent through living a healthy life. So protein, let's talk about it, right? I still think there is a misunderstanding of, you know, what are primary protein foods, right? This is one of the funnest things I always like to do in a lecture. I always do a quiz, right? And I'm like, okay, we're going to take this quiz. And generally my joke is, you guys got the study guide, right? Of course, the list, you know, the attendees were looking around and like, what do you mean study guide? I'm like, you guys didn't get it? And then my joke is, well, don't worry, it's just a three, you know, quiz or three question quiz. If you miss it, it's 30 burpees. So worst case, it's 90 burpees, right? And you can just see the fear sometimes in people's faces, except for like the single digit 130-pound dude, right? Like he's like 90 burpees, no problem, you know. But for the rest of us, we're like, ugh, burpees. And then I ask a food. And the three foods I do pick, don't get me wrong, they're picked for a reason, right?
Of
So I
course.
usually do whole milk, beans and nuts, right? And whole milk you could get in the weeds on, right? Because yes, whole milk has 13 grams of carbs, 8 grams of protein, 8 grams of fat. So if you did the math on calories, it's still pretty close, if not tipped towards the fat, right? Because 9 calories per gram, 8 grams of fat is what, 72 calories, and then 13 times four is, what's the quick math on that?
82.
82, right? So 84 to 82. I mean, it's pretty close to being both if we're looking at calories. But the point of I'm trying to,
52.
what was it?
52.
52. Okay. So it would be fat, right? So, you know, we look at the fat calories in a glass of whole milk is higher. But what I'm getting the point to people to realize is we should look at foods based on what is the highest macro, right? If you really want to think, okay, is this a protein, a carb, or a fat first? We want to look at macros, right? Because we don't do calories from food as much as we do absolute macros. So always, okay, what is whole milk? And usually 80, 90% of the attendees, no matter if this is a course, a lecture, fill in the blank, will choose that milk is a fat. And then most of them will do protein next. Very few do carb. But if you look at a glass of whole milk, it's 13 grams of carbs, 8 grams of protein, 8 grams of fat. Technically, it's higher than carbs than it is the other two macros. And then if you do skim milk, which a lot of people, you know, if they're in the quote low fat era or afraid of fat, will do. And then you're looking at 13 grams of carbohydrate, 8 grams of protein, and no fat, right? So that definitely being a carbohydrate source. So it's just one of those eye openers that, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, don't understand, you know, what are protein, carbs, and fat. And that can be a lot from marketing, what we've taught as dietitians, right? Because, you know, we don't necessarily teach macro groups. We teach food groups, right? And same thing for like protein. A lot of times protein is labeled as a, beans is labeled as a protein substitute.
Mm-hmm.
Legumes, great source of carbohydrate, great source of fiber, has some protein, but they are a carbohydrate first, right? So I still think there's this, you know, misunderstanding of what are, you know, protein foods inside of our society, you know, where if you really break it down, you're looking at meats, fish, eggs, some dairy, and protein shakes. Those are your primary protein sources. And, you know, if you don't like two or three of those groups, you will struggle a little bit to get protein in.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people, if they do adopt more of a plant-based intake, they forget that, okay, so, you know, I had this question come up over the weekend. You know, what does the NSCA say we're supposed to eat? Well, the NSCA doesn't say anything. It's not their information. They're sharing information from other relevant sources. So for a resistance-trained athlete, what you'd find in the textbook is 1.4 to 1.7 grams per kilogram of body weight is what they would recommend. It's, you know, it's different for an aerobic athlete, but then it's different if you're trying to gain weight. It's different if you're trying to lose weight. And it's substantially different if the protein quality, the source quality, is lower. Because no, you can't eat a lot of plant sources at 1.4 grams and think that life's going to be good.
Yeah, I was looking for my reference book. I've got it somewhere here. The Green NSCA nutrition reference book, right?
Which, oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're going to have it. It's a great read. But like you said, what they're doing is they're
it's in one of these shelves.
Yeah, they're looking at the data. They're looking at this is our position based on X, Y, and Z, right? And that's what a lot of us do as clinicians, you know, is we look at the data, we look at the research, and they say, okay, this is our position, right? Just the same way as me. Like, this is my position. Here's some things I try in individuals that there's not research out there, right? And we've talked about this, like how I do really well with fat loss, you know, is increasing protein, you know, kind of above, you know, what the recommendations are and pulling down the carbs and fats. So keeping the calorie high. I would love to eventually do the research on an isocaloric diet of say 2,600 calories with one person on 150 grams of protein, the other person on 300 grams of protein and dropping the carbs and fats and showing the difference in the fat loss. Like I'd love to be able to do research on that because I, you know, my hypothesis is the individual on the 2,600 calorie diet, and let's assume this is a male that has 60, 80 pounds to lose. The male that consumes 2,600 calories with 300 grams of protein is going to lose more body fat than the male on 2,600 calories, 150 grams of protein, right? And it might not be because of the protein. It could be because the fuel sources are different. But the point being, like, it matters and it's different, right? So
you
know, I think that's
something. You make an interesting point there, and I won't spend too much time on it, but science tells us something, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the nuances are exactly what we expect, right? Like it might be because protein is more satiating and you feel full, but again, in this example, it's an isocaloric diet. Maybe they're able to burn a few more calories, or there's so many different reasons behind why it could matter to this individual or that individual. But at the end of the day, who cares? It worked. Like that's for the academics to appreciate, who's writing the papers. But you know, for everybody listening here, the whole point is I'm trying to lose weight. I want to lose weight. What's the easiest way for me to accomplish that?
100%. A couple of things that you said that I want to pull out, and hopefully my recorder was working. My button was off. I'm pretty sure, though, it was still recorded on Zoom.
Pull that out, Reno, or leave it in. I don't care. Couple things I want to pull out there that you mentioned was the plant-based diet, right? So with a, you know, plant-based diet, a lot of people say, well, does my protein recommendation change? Do I still need as much protein? And the answer is yes. You actually probably need more protein if you're 100% plant-based, right? And the other thing that you mentioned, yes, there's slight difference between, okay, endurance athlete, slight difference in fat loss, slight difference in fill in the blank. The takeaway there is there is an increase from baseline. And if we say baseline is the American Dietetic Association or the RDA of 0.8 grams per gram of kilogram, then knowing that you need more protein than that, no matter where you're filling in the blank, right? And then I would argue that the person that's losing weight is kind of a hybrid of all that, right? Because they're not an endurance athlete per se, but maybe they're running a few days a week training for a half marathon, right? They're in the reduced caloric diet because there is a goal of fat loss. So they're having these things that are increasing that protein need, right? So I think the takeaway there is, hey, you're going to need more protein than what is out there in quote mainstream. And then once again, with the plant-based, you're going to need more protein because the plant-based protein is just not as optimal when it comes to the essential amino acids that is in the product, right? And we get that question a lot, you know, Vic, with collagen. Like, do you count collagen towards your daily intake? And my answer is always yes, right? Hey, you count it towards your daily intake, no different you would beans, no different you would, you know, any of your legumes. Like, it still counts. I just don't want you to take four scoops of collagen to hit your protein goal for the day. That's what I want people to stay away from.
You didn't talk much about nuts earlier, but you'd mentioned it. And I don't know how many times I've heard, I'm getting in tons of protein. I'm eating peanut butter sandwiches.
Listen, somebody asked me that. I love my team that I coach because they learn they can joke with me, which I love. Because someone was like, you know, it's like, how'd you injure your bicep? And someone said he was scooping out his protein or his peanut butter serving. And I'm like, touche, touche. I mean, we left that out. So I got through, you know, beans and same thing for nuts, right? Everybody thinks nuts or peanut butter is a protein source because the marketing of them will put high protein source on the front, but they're a fat source first, mm-hmm. right? So I think there's always just, you know, once again, a little bit of misconception of what are their protein foods out there, okay? All right, so I'm loving this because, you know, I just do a topic, you kind of give your experience, and then we can pull out things, you know, like we just pulled out the plant-based. Hey, you probably need more if you're plant-based, right? Hey, if you're doing any exercise, we need more. And then going to my general recommendation for people, of course, is, you know, 1 gram of protein per target body weight, which puts us in like some of those recommendations that you were talking about that we see out there, right?
They said, yeah, because your recommendation is 1 per pound.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of textbooks are reading, you know, 1 per kilogram. But yeah. Obviously pounds is a much easier way for everybody listening to relate that instead of having to do the conversion.
Conversion, right.
But, so I just wanted to say that because earlier we were talking about grams per kilogram.
And most people do it, like you said, it's because the research will be in kilograms, right? So I always try to do it in pound to make it easy. Yeah. And then by doing it on current, you know, your goal weight takes in the fact, right? So if I have coaches out there or someone's new when you're listening to this, when you say goal weight, it takes in the consideration, you know, is someone trying to lose weight or are they trying to gain weight, right? So because if I have a 300-pound client that needs to be 200, he doesn't need 300 grams of protein, right? Especially from the start. Now, I kind of joke that maybe I'll increase that for optimal results. But in the beginning, that 300-pound person doesn't need 300 grams of protein. 200 is enough, right? And once again, it's give or take. You know, if they're a little bit less, I'm okay with that. If they're a little bit more, I'm okay with that because that falls within the range that we speak on. So 100%. Now, the other thing I want to touch on, and this is a question that I've been getting a lot, you know, is, you know, should someone hit their protein goal, even if their calories are high, right? And I'm gonna put this in perspective of fat loss, right? So we've got someone in a reduced caloric diet, okay? And their question is, should I hit my protein if it's gonna put me over my calories, right? And I'm asking you that in a sense of like, I didn't prep you for this. I'm just asking the question, you know, because I'll give my kind of answer that I gave to my people today, but I wanna hear it from you, you know, from your experience. You know, once again, in the academia setting, not necessarily working with a lot of people one-on-one, but if someone was coming in saying, man, I just, you know, I don't want to eat that much protein because, you know, my calorie goal is going to be slightly, you know, 200 or 300 calories high if I hit my protein. What do I do? right? So how would you answer that?
Well, first, I would say that is ungodly nuanced. Yeah, there's so much to it because obviously we could look around and find out, well, why is that putting you over? What else are you doing that sets you well beyond the mark? Just like when I taught this past weekend, calories are important. Calories matter. It's just an energy source for your body, but protein is where I look first when I talk to people. I need to make sure that you're hitting a given standard. And again, like you mentioned, there's a range, right? It's not like this fractional amount of grams is what's going to be absolutely perfect for you. And if you miss that, then you're in trouble, right? You always go back to the quote of what gets measured gets managed. So we start you somewhere. We see if you're having success. If you are, great, we hold the course. If you're not, then we adjust fire. But again, context, nuance, how many are you going over? If you're way, way over, then I'd have an issue with that. But if I had to give you just one solid answer, I'm going to make sure they're hitting the recommendations for protein.
Because I mean, long term and dissecting that, right? So if you're in a fat loss goal, right? And Vic and I got you at 200 grams or 200 calories a day. I'm just hypothetically picking a number, right? Well, if you're hitting 200 calories, because your question is, Jeremy, I'm hitting my calories, but I'm low on protein. Should I eat 22, 2400 calories, but be over, calories to hit protein? The answer is yes, because if you're not hitting your protein goal, that means your calories are coming from your carbs and your fats, right? So you're already overeating the fuel sources. So we need to work on, once again, if we're looking at long-term habits anyway, let's work on getting the protein up. Because the goal is, right, long-term success. So hey, if you're overeating your calories that we gave you by 200, 300, 400, that just means we need to make changes to the carbs and fats a little bit, right? And most of the time, if you're a male, right, or even an active female on 2000 calories a day, you're probably still going to lose on 2200 or 2400, to be honest, right? Maybe not as much, but you're still going to lose, and you're definitely probably not going to gain. So yeah, that's something that, as a listener, like, hey, if you're struggling and you're a little over your calories, no matter if I've set them or someone else set them, that's okay. Once again, hit protein, really build that baseline, because then you can look back and be like, you know what? I hit 2600 calories, for the last month. I lost a pound, but I hit my protein. Cool. Now, okay, if we could pull a little bit of carbs and fats down to get you 2200 calories or 2300 calories, maybe we'll lose 2 pounds next week and we're progressing in the right way. But the habit of hitting that protein day in and day out is the big thing that we're building.
And I mentioned the word earlier, but when you eat more protein, you're more satiated. So you're going to have a lot less likelihood of feeling hungry and like you need to put more food in. And the key piece that you mentioned here is it's a long-term goal. We're not expecting results to happen next week or next month. Like the process takes time.
100%. Now you mentioned that. What are, for you personally, what are some examples of maybe larger protein meals that you really notice, like the hunger goes away? Like when you eat X, do you really notice, like, man, I don't even think about food. I'm completely good. I don't get hungry.
A lot of our protein in the household is purely animal source meat. We'll try to do a fair amount of steaks. We do more steak than we do burgers, a lot of chicken. Say, yeah, probably something in that ballpark helps me the most.
For me on that, I have found it does need to be more of like closer to the 10 ounces, right? So if I just did, say a 6 ounce, chicken breast or beef at 6 ounces, like I'm a fat kid at heart. Like I'm ready to eat again in 3 to 4 hours. But what I've noticed volume wise, if I can get up into that 10 to 12 ounces of like ground beef or chicken, like that fills me up. And I haven't, I need to look into this a little bit more is like, is it a certain amount? Is it different for every single person? Like what triggers from a hormonal standpoint of, up, is it leptin? An uptick of
Leptin
leptin?
versus ghrelin, yeah.
Yes. So like Is there a certain amount there? Does it vary per person? What is that, right? But one thing I've been trying with my clients a little bit is after they do hit start hitting their protein goal for the day, is to start playing around with like a larger, for lack of their terms, bolus, more protein first thing in the morning or whatever their breakfast is, right? Because remember, I'm not big on breakfast needing to be within the first half hour, right? The term breakfast means you're breaking your fast. So whenever you eat that first meal of the day, that is breakfast. So having a larger breakfast and then a larger last meal of the day. So I've been playing with people doing that just to see, how it affects them. Do they produce better results? Do they feel better on it? So those are some stuff I'm A, personally playing around with my nutrition, and B, recommending some of my clients as they're already hitting their protein goal. We're just trying to fine-tune the consumption of it.
Yep, makes sense.
Awesome.
Definitely like
Last.
the last meal of the day and the first meal of the day. That
Yeah,
way
just
you've
kind
got
of
it floating in the
playing around with
system.
that. Okay. The last question I'm going to ask you, and once again, I have my standpoint of what I've done, and this one varies, person to person, research to research. But the post-workout setting, right? So we start looking at the data of, do you need a post-workout protein? Because when we work out, for 24 hours, we have uptake of, muscle protein synthesis from exercise as far as consumption of protein, that, right? And I listened to a lecture the other day from a PhD on it, and sometimes I don't like the tone because it makes it sound like if you do a post-workout protein, like it's damaging. And I'm like, that's just, I don't like that, right? So my philosophy is this. When people ask, like, hey, should you do a protein shake post-workout? My answer is always yes, right? One, because it's not going to hurt, right? It is not going to hurt you to do protein in a post-workout setting, okay? I think it is better because, A, most people are not hungry post-workout, and most people don't hit their protein goal for the day unless they're supplementing a little bit of protein. So that's where I'm the fan of. I still think that doing a isolate protein in the post-workout setting is part of my game plan to optimize results, and especially with people who are new because they struggle to get the protein in otherwise, right? I think what really matters in the post-workout setting is adding some carbohydrate in once performance matters, right? So I think that's the big thing when it comes to post-workout nutrition is, yeah, you could do real food and not do a post-workout protein and still have good results when it comes to body fat composition and results living a longer, healthy life. Yes, I believe that. But when we start talking about optimizing glycogen recovery, and getting some carbohydrate in the post-workout setting, I think putting it with an isolate is our best option, right? From that standpoint. So what is your take on that? Are you kind of like me? You're like, well, it's not going to hurt anything, so we might as well do it, or are you kind of in the camp, well, the data says it doesn't matter, so don't do it. Like, what's your take?
So again, I'll go back to the context, and the answer is it depends. I've said this so much that one of my graduating classes a few years ago, they made themselves a class t-shirt, and it said it depends on the back. So, I don't want anybody absolutely, like I've had friends before that freak out if they can't get in post-exercise nutrition within 30 minutes, because we grew up in that era of the anabolic window.
Right.
And oh my God, all my gains are going to disappear. I wasted my entire time and my entire life if I don't get it in.
Yep. And
So,
just so that we're clear, I'm not in that camp, guys. So yes, I recommend the post-workout protein to everyone, but I do that to help hit protein needs, but also the behavior of doing something post-workout so that when workouts matter, I can add carbohydrate to it. So I'm getting fluid in, I'm hitting protein needs, plus I'm adding the carbohydrate eventually for glycogen stores. So that's my caveat, but I like
and
what you said.
I'm certainly not knocking that with that statement. So, like you mentioned, you are primed for rebuilding tissue. You said 24 hours. It goes all the way up to 48. Obviously, at some point, it starts to go back down. When you eat afterwards is largely based on when you ate before. So, if you work out in the morning and you fast when you go to work out, because you can't wake up an extra, certain amount of time beforehand, then yeah, you need to eat right away, relatively. right away. You know, one of the extra things that you mentioned was adding a carbohydrate source. Like what you have to realize from a recovery standpoint for your body, we're much more worried about fight or flight than we are how big our muscles look. So we need to replenish our glycogen stores that we depleted training before we're going to start building extra muscle tissue. Specifically to your point, yeah, I have absolutely zero issues with somebody taking in a shake afterwards, especially if they've got a little bit of some kind of, you know, sugar, glucose, some kind of carbohydrate in there to help replenish that. Again, a lot of what your focus is on is building habits, and you can never go wrong building habits. You set a plan, you follow that plan, and you keep doing that, you have success.
Awesome. No, I just, you know, it was one of those things that, you know, and I think like what you said, it is, we shouldn't be in the camp where like, hey, if you forget your shake that day and you don't have the shake and you just eat normal, but you still hit your protein needs for the day, it's like you didn't lose all that effort you put in the gym.
Right? Yeah, there's no emotional damage.
Yeah, you shouldn't knock over the 88-year-old grandmother, right, on your way to your protein shake post-workout, right? Do I think that, you know, we should do it most time? Yes, because it's quick, it's easy, it's convenient, it becomes a habit, and then I can put other things in there. I can stack habits, whether that be creatine in that shake, whether that be a little bit more glucose in that shake when performance starts to matter, right? Whether it's an extra scoop of protein because you're missing your protein for the day, there's a lot of things that I can do with it, right? But I don't think that we should get on the extremes of this being like, no, it doesn't matter, it doesn't help any, or on the flip side, like, you're not going to get any results if you do it. We should be somewhere in between. So that was, you know, I forget where that lecture was, but it was you know, put on by a university, and the guy, really good research, really good, but you could tell there are still some of those emotional, like, opinions coming out of it, right? Versus like, okay, that's your opinion on a protein shake, right? You're against protein shakes for some reason, you know, in there versus
you might saying, have a complete, you know, hatred towards supplementation
or supplementation. Correct. Right. Versus looking at it, you know, from the perspective of like, hey, it's not going to hurt anything. If it helps you hit your, you know, protein goal for the day, cool, go for it. But it's not going, you know, don't on the flip side, you know, and I can say this because, you know, work for a supplement company and see it sometimes inside of even our individuals, like, you know, oh, you're going to miss, you know, don't let your workouts go to a waste. Like, okay, it's not going to go to a waste, right? Mm-hmm. Now, where it's going to go to a waste is if you consume 40 grams of protein a day and you're out there working out hard. That's when you might waste that workout because you're just going to break your body down.
Substantially under.
So under eating protein for the day. So
depending on who you are as an individual and how you train, what is your response from a hunger standpoint, right? Some people, they train. And again, it depends on you as an individual, and it depends on how you train. But some people, they work out and they have no hunger sensations for hours just because of that strenuous activity. Other people, you've depleted so much glycogen that you get a hormonal trigger and it says you need to eat. And if you're early in your plan here, you're early in your progress, your goals, then maybe you grab the wrong thing because you're just getting, you know, a chemical signal that tells you it's time to eat. You need carbohydrate. A lot of carbohydrate-based meals that are easy to get a hold of might not be the best case for you. So especially in that setting, you take a post-workout shake that's easy to put down. You've got protein, you've got carbohydrate, and now you don't get that sensation. And it gives you an extra, you know, check in the win column.
I like it. And I always appreciate the conversation. Today, really, if you've listened to all the podcasts, it'd be a little bit of a review. But it was just a great, you know, point coming off our conference to speak on and talk on. And speaking of that, guys, you know, once again, the podcast is sponsored by Summit Rejuvenation, which is a, you know, like I say, concierge medication or concierge medical service when it comes to hormonal replacement blood work. Also from Green Up Wealth, who does all the financial planning for myself, also my family. So whether it's looking at a will, whether it's looking at future planning, they got you covered. They do everything. And then our unofficial sponsors, I guess, would be Maryville University, since you're on all the time. If you're looking for a online, because you guys have full degrees online, right?
Yeah, we've got one on ground and one online.
You guys can look at their online program if you're interested, or if you are in the St. Louis area and want to go back to school, you could do that. And then, of course, the unofficial sponsor that pays me every 2 weeks for my full-time job, First Form when it comes to that. So got to do better about talking about them,
Well, I would say, they love listening to you. They come to Maryville on our online program. They're going to have a couple classes with you.
That is correct. So it's supporting us in multiple different ways. So, and it's fun. I can tell you, teaching has really, because it's brought other aspects to me, because the questions I get from the students, okay, is a little bit different than the questions I get from my clients in some aspects, right? Some the same. And I don't know if I told you this. One of the guys that were at the conference was a student.
Oh, no, you hadn't mentioned it.
Yeah, because he came in afterwards. I didn't get a chance to talk to you about it. So he came up and was like, he was talking, and I'm like, wait a second, aren't you? And I can't remember his name, but I do remember he was a soccer player. And we got to talking, and then he was just like,
Carl?
yes, Carl. And he was like so thankful, because he needed a little bit more time for his classes, or for the tests and stuff. And we always worked through that. And it was just like, and he was just so thankful. I'm like, man, it was cool to meet you in person. Because he was one of the gentlemen and students that was very engaged, which you and I've talked about offline. Like, I like that, right? Like, hey, the more engaged you are with me, the more that I'm gonna help out, in that aspect. So awesome, man. You have a great day, and
You as well.
we will talk soon.
All right, sounds good.